We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
This is Tyrese Haliburton, and you're listening to Setting the Pace.
Indiana, home of Pacers basketball.
Miller for three, and he got it.
Legends have been born.
Miller retreats to the three-point line.
Memories have been made.
Haliburton, a deep three for the lead.
Bam, baby!
Great basketball has been played.
Nembhard away. Hits a three at the buzzer to win the game.
In 49 states, it's just basketball.
Flips it to the big fella, fake shoots, and hits!
But this is Indiana.
Flips it down.
And you're listening to Setting the Pace.
Let's go!
Your go-to Pacers podcast.
Setting the pace with Alex and Fauci.
Alex and Fauci. Alex and Allison.
Setting the pace with Alex and Fauci.
Alex and Fauci.
Alex and Allison.
Setting the pace with Alex and Fauci.
Alex and Fauci.
Alex and Allison.
Setting the pace with Alex and Fauci.
Alex and Fauci.
Alex and Allison.
We got Pacers hooping. Let's talk stats. Hot takes. All facts. New topics. Updates. Three-pointers. Fast breaks. We keep scoring. We don't need to stop. New episodes. Weekly drops. This your number one podcast. Sweeping every team. We gon' need a mop.
Setting like the pace with Alex and Fauci.
Alex and Fauci.
Alex and Allison.
Setting the pace with Alex and Fauci.
Alex and Fauci.
Alex and Allison.
Setting the pace with Alex and Fauci.
Alex and Fauci.
Alex and Allison.
Setting the pace with Alex and Fauci.
Alex and Fauci.
Alex and Allison.
Happy Friday, Pacer Nation. Welcome back to another episode here of your go-to Pacers podcast, Setting the Pace. And we are just a few days away from Pacers-Bucks Game 1 on Sunday night. But before we get into that, I thought it'd be great to have someone different on the show than just having a Pacers perspective. So I'm bringing on S. Barahini from Forbes.com to talk about this series with me. Obviously, S. is known for covering the Raptors. He came on and talked with us about Pascal Siakam earlier this season. But I thought it'd be great to kind of get his thoughts on, you know, how the Bucks previously guarded Pascal Siakam, you know, what Pascal can do in this series and what the Pacers can do in this series, what the Bucks can do in this series. So just trying to get an outsider's point of view and not just such a Pacers-centric point of view. So I think you guys are going to really enjoy this conversation, but I want to thank everybody that has already, you know, stepped up and purchased a Smear the Deer or Beat the Bucks playoff shirt that we just released on Wednesday night. I put a tweet out on Pacers Pod STP on Twitter that said, hey, if you retweet this and like this tweet, we're going to enter you into a contest to win one of these shirts for free. So these shirts are only $16 a piece. If you want expedite shipping, you can pay for that. If you want to just do standard shipping, it'll be there in about a week. So that would still give you plenty of time if you ordered it on Friday to get it before the game. But I would say, you know, probably pushing it a little bit if that's the case. But they are really nice shirts, and I think you're going to really enjoy them. Great graphic design. I think you guys, if you check them out, you'll notice how cool they are. But you can get sweatshirts, you can get different kind of you can get tank tops, you can get long sleeve shirts, whatever you prefer. I mean, they're short sleeve shirts too, but whatever you prefer, you can get that on the merchandise store at TeePublic. There's a link in the description of this podcast, so make sure you guys check that out, whether you're on YouTube, Apple, Spotify, you know, Google, wherever. Just make sure you guys look at that description. You will find a direct link there to get one of those shirts. So I think you guys are going to really enjoy them once you see them. They are fire if you haven't. So I'm excited to rock mine during the playoffs and on this podcast. So I think you guys are going to love rocking them too. If you're at the game, if you're just watching at home, it's just a good quality shirt. Why not get one? So anyway, thank you all so much for your support. Facci, obviously not on this episode today. Hope he's having a good time on his vacation, but he'll be back with me Sunday night to recap the game. So let's go ahead and take a quick break, and then we'll bring on S to talk about all things Pacers Bucks. Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring this episode of Setting the Pace. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement Systems, or simpler, EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System yet, you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. Whether you're here in Indiana or hundreds of other locations across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/pace to learn more and to find a center near you. That's unifiedhealing.com/pace, P-A-C-E. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE System. Now, let's get back to the show.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart, the seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
All right, everybody, joining us now on Setting the Pace. He's been on the show earlier this season, but making a return from Forbes.com. It's S. Barahini. S, appreciate you coming back, man. How you doing?
I'm good, man. Thank you so much for having me. Appreciate it. I was just telling you off air just how excited I am for, if you guys don't know, I covered the Toronto Raptors. And so I'm hyped to see Pascal Siakam and OG Anunoby in the playoffs, just because, you know, it wasn't too long ago these guys were on this side trying to do something. So I'm excited to see how they look in the postseason, man. Excited to see how the Pacers look too.
Yeah, and what's really interesting is those two guys could end up facing each other in round two of the playoffs if things shake out that way. So
that possibility is going to be an exciting one, because ever since OG was traded to New York, we never got to see him play against Pascal with the Pacers. So that matchup. Yeah. OG dealing with that elbow injury for quite a bit of time this year. Just limited him a lot in some games. But this is a really interesting series here from the Pacers and Bucks perspectives, because of the Giannis, you know, cliffhanger there. What's going to happen with Giannis? Is he going to play? Is he not going to play? There's so much up in the air. And then you've got a Pacers team that's playing pretty good basketball over the last couple of months. Their defense has gotten a lot better. And the Bucks, they've kind of stumbled down the stretch. Three of their last 10 games, they've only won. They've won 3-7 in their last 10 games. So, you know, this is a really weird spot, because the Pacers usually aren't being, or aren't known for being talked about as the favorite. But right now, it feels like a lot of people are leaning towards picking the Pacers in this series, especially with Giannis's, you know, uncertainty. So just want to get your perspective on this series from someone that maybe isn't a Pacer or a Bucks fan.
Yeah. I mean, just generally, especially with the Giannis injury, not knowing how long he's going to be out for, if he'll even return for this series, I feel like he would return. Although we can't really rule out the fact that he won't. Regardless, I sort of agree with the consensus that it's Indiana that's the favorite in this one. I think the way the Bucks stumbled, and we can probably get into some of the offensive, defensive, you know, matchup type of things that might happen in the series. But generally, to your point that you just made, the Bucks defense got better, but did it get better enough? And when you add in that Giannis element to it, where you're removing one of their best defenders, can they sustain for longer? And, you know, I guess the added question to that, as we sort of play this chess match, which is what any postseason series is, you know, can their defense hold up enough for their offense to compete with the Pacers? And Indiana obviously has had an incredible offense all season. They add a Pascal Siakam dynamic that we sort of mentioned just now. I think it propels the Pacers to be the favorites in this, sort of any way you look at it. And so we can get into the specifics of how it all looks, but I would agree with you that the Pacers are favored, in my opinion.
Yeah, when you talk about the Bucks defense, it was 19th in net rating when Adrian Griffin was there. It improved to 15th. So it got a little bit better, but not much. I know their transition defense has gotten better. I know TJ McConnell talked in practice about how their rim defense is like number one in the league since Doc Rivers took over. And with Brooke and Giannis there, it's kind of an old school back or front court. You know, that is something that will be problematic, because the Pacers like to get into the paint. They like to score a lot at the rim, and they like to shoot a lot of threes. I mean, it's kind of a modern day basketball, but they do play a random style. But in all of these matchups, you know, we never saw Pascal play for the Pacers against the Bucks when the Pacers beat them 4-1 in the regular season. And then you also have to realize Doc Rivers was not there for any of that. Yeah. Neither was Patrick Beverley. So there are some different players in here that are going to be big factors. But when you look at Pascal, someone that you covered quite
a bit. And also no Ben Mather and no Buddy Hield on the Pacers side.
Right, right.
And so that changes the dynamic of Indiana. Like, you know, you throw in more Nembhard, more Nesmith, and you're looking like a much better, more well-rounded defensive team. Sorry to interrupt you.
No. And same with Ben Shepherd. Ben Shepherd will probably get some significant minutes off the bench as well, because he's probably their best backup wing defender. So, you know, I think he'll get some minutes, but I want to look more at Pascal, because this is a guy that you're very familiar with. Curious, when they've played Bucks teams of the past, how has Pascal usually performed against the Bucks, especially Giannis in that matchup? And has Giannis kind of been his primary defender?
Yeah, that's a good question. I know for sure in the 2019 season, Giannis was not the primary defender on Pascal. I believe they would usually go, Brooke on Pascal, so that because Pascal wasn't that much of a shooter. So it was, hey, you know, let him kind of space out. Brooke can camp inside a little bit more. And then Giannis would either be on Mark. Yeah, he would usually be on Mark, kind of roaming around. And that gave him the ability to be such a great defender, defensive player of the year that season, right? So that was in 2019. They haven't played in the playoffs since then. And I want to say before then, what was it? It would have been the 2016 or 17 series. And so you're facing a completely different Giannis Antetokounmpo at that point. Like, it's not even comparable. So it'd be hard to. And Pascal, I don't think, was in the league at that point. I might be getting my years wrong here. So it might just be the one series. In that one series, Pascal wasn't the primary on Giannis, and Giannis wasn't the primary on Pascal, vice versa. I think that generally, though, across the years through the regular season, Giannis has done well on Pascal, but Pascal has been able to score the ball against the Bucks pretty well as well. Just getting into his bag as a mid-range scorer, finishing in and around the basket, using his speed and quickness against, you know, kind of cross matches with Brook Lopez, getting him off of his spot. I also think just as a screener in the pick and roll, he can kind of get into the short roll, make a play. And so against the Bucks, that gets heightened a little bit because of the lack of their perimeter defense, or their perimeter defense, I should say, is a work in progress. Those are the areas where I've seen Pascal shine against the Bucks. That being said, I'm curious to see how it looks against this specific Bucks team, because I guess I'm just wondering how Milwaukee is going to pair up against Pascal's size without a guy like Giannis. Because Bobby Portis is a favorable matchup for Pascal. I think Brook Lopez is a little bit too slow-footed to try one-on-one to really go after him, and likely they wouldn't want Brook chasing around Pascal for an entire series. And so that being said, I just don't know if there's that option that's available to guard a player like Pascal that gives you guys another advantage in this situation. And so, yeah, I think he's going to have a good series, I would probably wager.
Yeah, we've talked about it a little bit on this podcast over the last couple of days. You know, could the Bucks, if Giannis doesn't play in game one, we're just assuming he doesn't, Bobby Portis probably guards Miles Turner, knowing that Miles is the primary pick and roller with Tyrese Haliburton at the point of attack.
Right.
So you don't want Brook Lopez in that, because we saw how Tyrese just, you know, obliterated everything the Bucks did in their drop coverage with Brook Lopez. So with Pascal not being as big of a threat from outside as Miles Turner, maybe they throw Brook Lopez on Pascal Siakam, and how much more does that open up for the Pacers? And then do they run more pick and roll, pick and pop stuff between Tyrese and Pascal, or maybe make Pascal the primary ball handler and run some different actions? I think that's a really interesting dynamic, though.
Since we're in the weeds here for a little bit, how do you feel about the way the Pacers could guard Dame, just more generally? That was something that kind of popped up initially when I thought of what the series could be too.
Yeah, I mean, I think Nimhard is, you know, going to be okay with Dame. I think that if you look at some of the matchups that Nimhard really struggled with, it's more physical guards, like a Jalen Brunson type of player that can kind of get into him. But I think he's able to kind of hang with Dame, and he really didn't have much of an opportunity to do it in the previous games because he wasn't starting. So he was kind of coming off the bench, playing a little bit more of a different role. And I think that he'll, you know, Dame's still going to be Dame. I'm sure of that. He's going to have to be, because I think he knows more pressure is on him. But I think the key is to make Dame work on the other side of the basketball as well, because we know Nimhard is probably who Dame will guard as well, hoping he can kind of hide a little bit more on Nimhard. But Nimhard is a point guard first, and he knows how to get into the paint. He's pretty crafty with what he does. And I think if you go back and watch some of the in-season tournament game, the Bucks went to a zone, and Nimhard was just flashing the middle on that zone and had like 6 points in a row. So I think Nimhard just a really smart, crafty player, and not a great three-point shooter, which does kind of hurt the Pacers' spacing a little bit, I think, more than what they used to have with Buddy and Bruce and Obi in the starting five. You kind of shrink that a little bit with Nimhard and Siakam out there, but they're just so much more physical and so much more athletic and lengthy defensively. So it's kind of like they traded in some offense for some defense when they already had, you know, enough offense to really be great. So I think with Dame, though, defensively, it'll mostly be Nimhard. If he gets in foul trouble, I can see them going to Nesmith.
Okay. But, so that was essentially my question, is where does Nesmith kind of play into this? Because, you know, because Nembhard is still a little bit small on the smaller side of things. And so if the pull-up shooting from Dame is just on another level this series, you can switch Nesmith onto him.
Yeah.
Little bit bigger body, obviously more size, more ability to contest, and so that gives you a different look. That just from Rick Carlisle's perspective, I'm fascinated to see what he goes with first and what the option will be, how they stagger it, because I don't think it'll just be Nembhard. I don't think it'll just be Nesmith either. I think they're going to throw multiple defenders at Dame to just make it uncomfortable. I wouldn't be surprised if Pascal gets some kind of reps guarding him as well. Yeah, I think that's a fascinating aspect, and I know we kind of got off track because we were talking about Pascal, but I think that's another element that he can sort of impact the game outside of the offensive perspective. It's when the going gets tough against these quicker guards, he actually does a pretty good job guarding at the point of attack. I know there have been some moments off ball. Caitlin, shout out to Caitlin. I've seen the videos of him sort of falling asleep on ball and you know, some defensive lapses, if you will. But I think when the going gets tough, there are moments where he can be a solid on-ball defender against these quicker guards. I've seen it against guys like Darius Garland and Donovan Mitchell. He's been the guy, the primary guy sometimes when the Raptors have had to. I think we could see that with Dame too.
Yeah, I mean, one of the things that we just saw against the Cavaliers last Friday was we saw Andrew Nembhard started out on Darius Garland. Aaron Nesmith started out on Donovan Mitchell. Right. And they ended up switching that in the second half. And Andrew Nembhard did a much, much better job on Donovan Mitchell than Aaron Nesmith did. I think he's just better at defending without fouling. And there was a possession that was like probably 2 minutes left in the game, maybe a minute and a half left in the game. And Nembhard just played, you know, Don so good. Like, Mitchell had no clear space whatsoever. He took a contested shot. I think he almost airballed it or like just grazed the front of the rim. It was just great defense. And Nembhard loves those challenges. Like, he really wants to be that defensive guy. And I know David Thorpe, when he's come on this show, he actually compared him. He thinks that Andrew Nembhard has some Jrue Holiday like, you know, qualities in him. You know, I'm like, if he can kind of have a breakout moment in the playoffs, like, that'd be really cool for him, because I know he's still trying to like prove himself a little bit, wasn't really the starter all year long, but it is nice to have Nesmith as a possibility. I think what's interesting is you talked about Caitlin. I listened to her podcast with Samson, and there's a great, great listen. If you haven't listened, Piece of Fangio.
Yeah, you got the other Raptors guy. Yes. Sorry, pal. No, I'm kidding.
No, but I mean, I enjoy, you know, everything. I'm glad to hear different people talk about it, but one thing that she was talking about, and I think Samson, like, at first didn't have the same defensive assignments set up. She talked about how Middleton might be a little bit too big for Nesmith because of what Brandon Ingram did to Nesmith in New Orleans. Just like, he was right there at the right time. He's 2 or 3 inches shorter, so the guy can get the shot over him. She thought about maybe putting Nesmith on Giannis and talked about putting Pascal on Chris Middleton. And so I was wanting to get back to Pascal.
You're eating some fouls there on that rate, though, because then, I mean, not only does Nesmith foul a lot, and so, like, then you're putting Nesmith in foul trouble. Where are you going to get that wing defender? I don't know. Caitlin, I got to bring that up to you, I guess, but yeah.
Yeah, the Pacers, though, they did build a wall the last two games against the Bucks, and it was like Jalen Smith was starting at power four before they got Siakam. They moved Obi Toppin to the bench. And Jalen was starting out on Giannis, and he was basically just standing at the free throw line, you know, letting him kind of have that room. And then Miles and whoever the other guard were, maybe it was Buddy, maybe it was Tyrese at times, they would all just form right there and make three for Giannis to get through. So it was like, and he went down significantly in numbers for points per game. So I think,
and for what it's worth, like, if he comes back, he's coming back.
Yeah,
probably at like 85-75%. He's not coming back 100%. Yeah. And so, and
you might be able to get away with hiding, you know, a Nesmith on him, but Nesmith overplays all the time, so that's the thing. And I know Chris Middleton, to me, I think Chris Middleton's kind of the X factor for the Bucks in this series. I know he's not been incredibly healthy this year, and I know that his numbers have been down, but he knows how to win, and he hits a lot of big shots. He's had a lot of big moments in his career. And I think he'll know, like, I've got to step up. And he shot the ball really well. I think he shot over 50% in every game this year against the Pacers. So he had good looks. He just didn't take a lot of shots because Giannis was dropping 50-some points a game on the Pacers. So, you know, it was just one of those things. But I think for Indiana, just the different matchups that they have is going to be interesting. And I also think that the Obi Toppin factor could be very interesting because Obi Toppin has played incredible for the Pacers this year. I think he really fits the system. The month of April mostly, but a little bit of March too. Like, he really just like took off as a kind of a scorer off the bench. And I think that with his versatility, I would be kind of interested to see if the Pacers maybe go with a Siakam, Toppin, Turner lineup at some point. Just
go a little bit bigger.
More size out there.
Yeah. I love that idea. I obviously Toppin comes with some flaws defensively, in that there's no question. But I think in terms of just getting more size out there, also the transition play will be incredible when you add him plus Pascal plus Tyrese. I agree with you that Middleton is the X factor here for the Bucks. He, in my opinion, if Giannis isn't playing for half of this series or more, he needs to be an all-star level player for them to win this series. And that's, I think that's asking a lot out of the season we've gotten from Chris Middleton, where he's been on and off. There's been some inconsistency. Obviously the injuries play a factor in that, but then you question if he can put it together for a 7-game series. That's been the question for me with the Bucks pretty much all year. Is, all right, cool, we've had some moments from Dame, we've had obviously an incredible season from Giannis, the defense is picking up, but can Middleton be that final puzzle piece for them? And yeah, I'm really fascinated from the Bucks perspective on that side. When you bring up Toppin and just Indiana in general, another guy who I think can just be, I mean, you know this more than anybody, the change of pace that TJ McConnell can bring and add to a game. Just out of nowhere, he's like throwing a firecracker on the basketball court. And I think that could also be a bit of an X factor here. The defensive point of attack stuff, I think he, like Nembhard, can get into the paint, right? Create attention, and like he's going to get a paint touch regardless. And that creates open shots. I think the bench lineup, I was looking this up earlier, but like one of the bench lineups is, doesn't play often. It's only 45 minutes post All-Star break, but it's McConnell, Smith, Shepherd, Toppin, and McDermott, and it's plus 31 in those minutes. And so like he finds ways to create offense, and I think that will be a bit of an X factor here against the Bucks team, who again at the point of attack I just still don't really believe in their ability to guard guards. So there could be a big series for Tyrese there. There could be a big series for Nembhard, maybe McConnell, we'll see, right?
Yeah, I'm kind of interested to see if Carlisle does try to pair McConnell and Halliburton more together. Cool. Especially if Nembhard gets in foul trouble, right? Because I could see them throwing McConnell potentially on Dame. I don't know how good of a defensive matchup that would be. I don't know. We really don't talk a lot about TJ's on-ball defense. I mean, he's a scrappy guy, but yeah. I don't know.
Maybe he could scrap for like 5 minutes, you know, give you five. I don't know. 5 minutes is too much in an NBA game, but
But like just making Dame work on defense, I think would be something that TJ could really do well.
Yeah.
So you might be able to get some back on the offensive end. Like he's shooting incredible. Like the last 20 some games, like 55% from two, 53% from three. Like he's not, and like they're giving him open looks obviously, cause he's not a prolific 3-point shooter, but he's definitely hitting them at a high rate now, and he's put a lot of work into that shot. I mean, I watch him pregame, and it's just crazy to see how much he puts into it. So
reluctant. He is reluctant, though. He's just like, do I have to shoot this ball right now? Are you guys sure? Yeah. I've seen him sometimes in the corner. He's like, I don't know. But he takes them. I'm excited. I'm honestly, as we talk about this and as we break this down, because I thought about the series in preparation for this podcast, but sort of just to hear your perspective from the Pacers side of things, it's opened up a few different options for me in terms of how this series could work out. How are you feeling about Giannis coming back in general? Do you feel confident in the fact that he'll return at some point this series? What's your percentage on that even?
Yeah.
Because it's a completely different series once you throw that in, right?
I mean, yeah. I mean, you're talking about the best player in the series right now. I mean, MVP level player. So, yeah, I mean, it's definitely going to make a big difference. Is he fully healthy? That's the biggest question. Right. And I think if Indiana, you know, I think he's going to come back. I think Rick Carlisle said they're preparing like he's going to be there for game one, because you just never know. Like, they could say he's out until Sunday morning, and then all of a sudden, oh, he's questionable to play in this game. You know, that's kind of how things happen in the playoffs. They try to play a little poker here and not let you know what's going on. Yeah. But I would assume if the Pacers beat them pretty handily in game one, he is definitely back for game two. If it's a close loss, maybe the Bucks try to play one more without him, let him have about, I would say close to like was 2.5 weeks then for that game three Friday at in Indianapolis. So I could see him definitely at least coming back for game three. I know Shams had a report today saying that he could possibly miss both games, one and two. Antoine Walker was on that broadcast, and he said he shouldn't come back till game three. I think that's a lot of pressure to put on your star player to bring him back on the road in game three. Like, yeah, I'm sure he's not afraid of that or anything like that, but it's just a lot of pressure, right. Especially yeah. if he's not fully healthy. And you got to think long-term because this has just not been a good Bucs year. Like, I know they were number two for a while, but they just haven't had that season that they expected to have after
it's
getting
not,
game.
It's not like if you're resting Giannis, you're skipping out on a championship opportunity.
Right.
Because I don't think they're a championship team. I think right. they would, yeah. Yeah, I agree with you on that front.
Yeah, and you got to look long-term. And I think that's what I would do if I was the Bucks, just because Giannis is so important to your franchise. You don't want him to come back and then re-injure it and right. then potentially miss more time next season. Like, mm-hmm. that's the worst-case scenario for them. But I think he's going to come back. I would say there's probably a 90% chance that he's back for game two. I definitely think he'll be back for game three. I'd be shocked if he's not.
Is it a bit of a staggered time for game one to two? Is it like...
It's
Sunday,
Tuesday,
Wednesday,
Sunday, oh, okay. Tuesday, okay, and then gotcha. Friday, Sunday. So
right. So maybe game three. I could see game three just because of that big gap. Sometimes yeah. they do that for series, and so now he has a bit of an extra week off. But who knows? We'll see.
Yeah, it's going to be an interesting dynamic, and I think for the Bucks, one of the things that I'm really fascinated with is Patrick Beverley, because if you put Patrick Beverley in the starting lineup, it really and Giannis doesn't play. Like, just look at how weak that Milwaukee bench is. You're just right. like talking about a team that they already struggled to stop the Pacers bench before. And now the Pacers bench has been playing so well with that lineup you just talked about with McDermott and Shepherd and Toppin and McConnell and Smith. Like, it doesn't sound that great on paper, but they know how to play.
They would work. Yeah.
So, yeah, and we'll see if McDermott gets into the rotation. I could see him probably getting cut out of that, maybe going to a 9-man rotation. Maybe you play Nesmith, Nembhard, or Siakam with the second unit. I know they've not loved playing a lot of Toppin and Siakam with a big. I know I mentioned that earlier as a possibility. They haven't done that a lot. It's either been one or the other. They've done more Nesmith, Nembhard in second halves with that bench unit. So I think that could be something to keep an eye on, especially if Dame's out there for 40-some minutes a game. Probably just keep somebody out there to guard him and check him at all times. But, you know, I think the dynamic, though, of Patrick Beverley, I wanted to ask you about this because
yeah,
him guarding Tyrese Haliburton, obviously – he's, you know, they have a little history from when he was with Chicago and things like that. And we know that Patrick Beverley can kind of be a dirty player. Yeah. Is that something Pacer fans should be a little bit concerned about?
Worried about?
Pretty bad.
Yeah. I mean, look, yeah, he's going to be feisty. I don't want to liken him to TJ McConnell because I don't think they're very similar, but they kind of get in your face, get into your grill type of guys, play with their heart on the sleeve, if you will. And so I think in that level, Pat Bev will be getting into him a little bit. I guess I don't want to throw the question back at you, but for Haliburton, and I think this is another sort of question mark from this series. It's like, how do you feel about him going into the postseason? How do you, cause I know there's obviously been he hasn't been the same post injury, all that stuff. How does that factor into this question about Pat Bev, you know?
Yeah. I still feel like we haven't seen Tyrese fully healthy. I still think that there are some limitations to what he's been, you know, been able to do. Like he clearly is not shooting the ball as well as he once was.
Right.
And that's part of the problem is like just putting that extra pressure on that hamstring that he, yeah. you know, pulled. So yeah. I think that's a big factor, but I also think he's not been scoring as much. He's kind of deferred more to Pascal. Pascal's been the leading scorer since the All-Star break. And I think that's going to continue to be that way. I think – I forget who talked about – it was Draymond. Draymond Green brought this up on his podcast saying that, you know, if the Pacers want to win, Pascal's got to be the number one guy. Well, Draymond, newsflash, Pascal has been the number one guy for the Pacers for the past 3 months. So, you know, and I think Tyrese understands, like, my job is to pass first and score second. And there's going to be times when I need him to score, but I've been a little bit underwhelmed with Tyrese in pressure recently because right. he seems like he's kind of – you know, falling in love with that step back three while the percentage hasn't been that high. But one thing we do know about Tyrese just from since he's been here, like when the games are usually the biggest, he shows up for those games. Like you saw what he did in the in-season tournament, even against Boston, like the big shots that he hit with great defense on him. So I think he's going to figure out a way to counter all the stuff Pat Bev does. There might be one game in the series where Pat Bev really messes with him, but I think he is so smart. And the adjustments he's going to make as a player in a series, I'm really fascinated to see because he doesn't usually get beat very often back-to-back by you know, the same type of coverage, that kind of thing. He's so smart about reading defenses and things like that. So if you throw something new at him, he's going to adjust and have it, right, you know, locked down for the next game. So I think Pat Bev will do a good job of kind of forcing him left a little bit more, because he likes to go right a ton. And we saw him do that when he was with Chicago. But you're going to have to really set the right screens and get him the right angles to take advantage of that. And I think that he might get a break on defense guarding Pat Bev, because Pat Bev's not like the most prolific scorer. But one thing Tyrese can't do is fall asleep on defense, because Pat Bev can hit from outside. And right, we saw how Max Strus in like the final 3 minutes of that game against the Cavs last Friday just took advantage of Tyrese Halliburton ball watching and crashing the glass for offensive rebounds, relocating for three, putting everybody in a defensive scramble. Tyrese can't be that version of himself. He has to be locked in.
I'm actually curious if they end up throwing two to the ball with Tyrese. So now it's a blitz or hard hedge, or the big is showing, or little hedge and recover. Like, there's a couple of different ways. Trap, even you could trap Tyrese and just get the ball out of his hands. And so that is an interesting little wrinkle that Milwaukee can throw out. I don't know how soon in the series they would throw that out. Hallie probably would have to beat them a couple of times for them to do that. But at the same time, you get the ball out of, I'm just thinking from the Bucks' perspective, you get the ball out of the best playmaker.
Yeah.
You force it into the short roll area likely. Siakam can hurt you in that aspect, but also if you close out on Siakam properly, now he's kicking it out to Nembhard, not a good shooter, right, as we mentioned earlier, or yes, Miles Turner on the dump off, or Nesmith, right? And so you'd rather live with that than Tyrese Halliburton beating you if you're the Milwaukee Bucks. And so, kind of full circle moment here, I think to your point, Nembhard, X factor, Nesmith, X factor, McConnell, maybe even X factor.
Yeah.
These complimentary guys will have to hit their shots, because I do think Hallie's going to get that type of attention. And then, how is Pascal going to feast off of that too? I think that's a really, really fascinating aspect of this.
Yeah. There's going to be a lot of different things thrown at Tyrese's way. Like, we know that Doc Rivers is not going to just let Tyrese do what Tyrese does. And I'll be surprised if they play any drop coverage. I'm assuming they'll hedge a lot, switch a lot, try to make things difficult for him. But I think Pat Bev's going to fight through a lot of screens to try to stay with him, because Pat Bev's really good at doing that. You know, he's good at navigating screens. And that's one thing Pascal was struggling a little bit with earlier, was his ability to, navigate through those screens. He kind of just gets hung up on it, like,
Oh, man. It's funny. It's funny you say that, because that used to be one of his best defensive qualities. And really? Now it's just,
he's getting older.
Getting up there, I guess.
Yeah. I mean, that's one thing Nembhard does such a great job at. He gets so skinny on those screens and fights through. And I think that's what Pat Bev does pretty well, too. Like, that's part of the reason why Pat Bev has been able to stay in the league. I know he wears his welcome out everywhere he goes, but he's, I think he is kind of one of those guys that can really be a junkyard dog and kind of make things interesting. And I think Bobby Portis is another guy that can, he's been in these big moments before. He knows what it takes. He can hit some shots if you leave him open. Sure. I think that could be, my biggest thing in this series is I think that Pascal and Miles have to dominate the Portis-Lopez matchup. They cannot allow that to be anywhere close to even, because if they are kind of trading baskets back and forth, like, you're expecting Middleton and Dame to kind of go off a little bit for Milwaukee, but if you can kind of control everything else, you're hoping Tyrese and Nesmith and McConnell can kind of match that. Maybe Nembhard a little bit there too, but Pascal and Miles have to be just crushing both of the Bucks bigs without Giannis in any part of the series. They just can't allow for Lopez to hit like 3 of 3 from three, because he can do that. If you're Miles defensively, you have to make sure that you're closing out on those threes and still being effective in the paint too. So, I mean, it's not like they're easy matchups, but I think the Pacers clearly have the upper advantage when you're looking at Portis and Lopez versus Turner and Siakam.
Yeah. I mean, man, you've got me excited to watch how Pascal's going to work in this matchup, because I think it's a pretty big game for his career too. Like, it's a pretty big playoff series for his career. You talk about a lot of the conversation around Pascal and his playoff performances over the last whatever amount of years. I think this is pretty big, because he has a team around him that works, that matches. And from a Raptors perspective, I think a lot of the dialogue, a lot of the narrative, if you will, was, hey, he never had the team around him to be able to be this great scorer, this great player in the postseason. Now that he has that team, I think this is going to be a big moment for him to be able to kind of embrace that, if you will. make the most of it. Because if I'm Milwaukee, I'm saying, all right, cool. Halliburton is not beating us. Let's see who else can beat us in the series. And, you know, Siakam, obviously, you mentioned the leading scorer post-All-Star break. Like, he's been able to get to his buckets, but is that going to be enough when you have Dame on the other side? You mentioned Bobby Portis, Brooke Lopez, et cetera, et cetera. Yeah, that's where the series might come down to, which is exciting.
Yeah, we talked about it. We talked about, you know, the experience going against the youth and, you know, the, you know, Tyrese has never been here. Nembhard, never been in the playoffs.
Right.
Neesmith was on the Celtics, but he really didn't play a whole lot. Same with Jalen Smith. Like, those guys were, they played the Bucks in that championship run for Milwaukee, but they really didn't see the floor, but they kind of know what it takes because they've been a part of a team that knows how to get there. So their experience a little bit can hopefully play a factor. But Pascal winning a championship with Toronto, you know, they really banked heavily on Bruce Brown winning a championship. That's why they kind of brought him in here before they traded him to Toronto for Pascal. Right. And they end up keeping that championship experience and getting Siakam. But, you know, they just – and Miles, like, Miles has never won a playoff series, but Miles has been in a couple of game sevens, you know, against
the Raptors. And
the Raptors, the Raptors series. That was a fun one.
Yeah.
You know, Rodney Stuckey was on the Pacers at that point.
Yes, he was. Rodney Stuckey was on that Pacers team.
That was Frank Vogel's last year. That's when Miles and Jan Mahimi started together at the 4 and the 5. So,
yep. Paul George was very good in that series, man.
Yeah.
He was incredible in that series. Anyways, this is
yes, we're going not, down you know,
memory lane here. Memory lane. If I do, are we doing predictions? Are we throwing
out? Yeah, give me your prediction. I mean, I've already gave mine the last episode, so.
Sure, yeah. Pacers in six. I think it's Pacers in six without Giannis. I think if Giannis comes game two or three, I might be able to push Pacers to seven. But I really do think that regardless, that this will be a Pacers series to win. There are some ways that Milwaukee wins this. We talked about Middleton potentially turning into all-star form. If Giannis comes back and he's more healthy than we're expecting, then that changes things. There are different versions of this. Dame going off also. There's different versions where Milwaukee can win, but I think I would lean Indiana.
Yeah, I think
not just saying that. I'm not just saying that because I'm on an Indiana Pacers podcast, by the way.
Right.
Just, yeah.
Yeah, and I said if Giannis was healthy for the whole series, I'd pick the Bucks in seven. But because he's probably not going to be, I've got the Pacers in six as well. That's what I picked. That's what my co-host picked. And it feels like if Giannis doesn't come back at all, I think you're probably looking at Pacers in five, maybe. Pacers in four, even. But the biggest thing I
four
would, say,
would be surprising. You know,
just that's... the Pacers winning a game five in Milwaukee seems very unlikely. True. That's why six feels safe. I can't see Indiana winning a game seven in Milwaukee. I mean, never say never, right? But it just, you don't usually see that where a team wins on the road in a game seven. It'd be awesome, right, for Indiana, but. That's the biggest thing. And I think my other fear is we've seen this Pacers team overlook teams that don't have their best player or, you know, they're a team that's struggling. If Milwaukee doesn't have Giannis, do the Pacers kind of get big eyes and say, we got this game in the bag? They can't have that mentality. I'm pretty sure Rick Carlisle is trying to beat that out of them every single practice. You can't worry about who's on the court. You got to just go out there and win. Like, if he's not there, that's an advantage, but we have to take advantage of it. We can't allow the Bucks to hang around because that crowd in Milwaukee is great. And we know that they're, you know, they have great fans there. You know, a little annoying on social media sometimes, but I mean, when the Pacers beat you 4 out of 5 games, you know, they're going to be insufferable on the one they win. So,
hey, when was the last time that I'm trying to rack my brain around it? When was the last time the Pacers were in a playoff series?
It was back in the bubble when they played the Heat.
2020. Okay, yeah. Gotcha. Oh, right, right. TJ Warren. Yes, I remember now. Okay.
That's when Oladipo was.
Yeah, yeah.
Can I come play with y'all with Bam Adebayo after the game? Game series sweep.
Oh, God, I remember that.
That was a fun one there. So, yeah, we'll. It'll be fun, though. I think everyone's excited for the Pacers to, you know, get back and really kind of showcase what they can do. Fun, different team, different coach. Obviously, a lot to play for here. I think, you know, the Pacers really have nothing to lose. If they lose this series, I don't think anybody's going to be like, well, we expected that. You know, I think everyone's just going to be like, okay, the Pacers made it, right? If they win anything, this is a great opportunity. Now, I have said all year long, really, since the in-season tournament run, this kind of feels like the Pacers have a legitimate shot to make it to the Eastern Conference Finals, similar to the Hawks when they made it with Trae Young in his first year, beating the Knicks in that first series. But I wouldn't bank on it. I don't know if they can get past their opponent in round two. But
right, with New York or Philly.
New York, yeah, or Philly. I think those are going to be really tough opponents. But I think if they win this one convincingly and have more confidence in themselves, hey, you just never know. All you got to do is click at the right time.
Yeah. And either way, they play a former Raptor, by the way, which is funny. In New York, they play OG. In Philly, they're playing Kyle Lowry and Nick Nurse, which is just funny how that life works now. Anyways, sorry, I don't mean to make it Raptors-esque.
It's
but
all right.
I'm excited. I'm excited to watch this series. This is probably, you know, if we talk about all the narrative aspects, the in-season tournament, the ball gates, and everything, this is definitely one of those ones that you have to be tuned in for every game. So I'm excited for that.
Yeah, for sure. I'm excited too. I think it's going to be a fun series. And you know what? Can the Pacers, my thing for the Pacers, can they keep the pace up fast and not allow Damian Lillard to kind of get into a slow half-court game? Because that's where he thrives. But if you make Dame run a lot, you'll probably see some similar numbers to what he did in the regular season. And that was a lot of shots, but not a lot of high percentage, you know, numbers. And I think if you can kind of get Dame to score 25 points on 25% shooting from three, you live with that. It's you know, you just don't want Dame going for 40 some points on like 60% shooting. That's where it's going to get problematic.
It'll happen for one game. He'll get one game where it's like that, and that's like that'll be their game three or four win, or maybe game two, whatever.
Yeah.
But that'll probably be the one game that makes it 2-1 or 3-2 or whatever, and then you end up winning.
5:30 tip off for the first Pacers game. I think it's so crazy. 5:30. What a weird time. Who knows?
What is that? Sunday, right? Sunday.
No, it's on a Friday night. 5:30 on a Friday.
Oh, for game three. Interesting.
For game three. Yeah. Huh. Everyone's like, wow, the NBA is trying to screw the Pacers. I don't understand. It's on ESPN too. Whatever. I mean, it's a reason to get off early from work Friday. That's the only thing I can say. I appreciate it, man. Appreciate your prediction for this series. Any final thoughts before we wrap up?
No, I'm excited for the playoffs in general. You know, playing has been a lot of fun. Sadly, a couple of injuries, but it's been fun to watch regardless. And I'm just excited for the playoffs. It's going to be insane. I think it's prepping up to be one of the best playoffs we've had in a while, I think.
Yeah, I think, you know, with how much parity there is in the league, it makes it very exciting because you just know there's a lot of different teams like that are lower seeds that could win against some of the higher seeds. And I think that's what makes it very exciting. I mean, Lakers
like
and Nuggets. What'd you say?
I like the Pacers.
Yeah.
You know, they could very easy.
A lot of people like Philly, you know?
Yeah.
You know, absolutely. Even Cleveland-Orlando is kind of an interesting matchup. I know people are kind of sleeping on that. It's the NBA TV series. They got all the early tip-offs, 1 o'clock games on the weekends. But I think it could be interesting. I kind of hope that Orlando gives Cleveland
some trouble.
Yeah. Just because Cleveland tanked their way into the fourth seed to play Orlando.
Well, I'll tell you this. If Orlando wins that series, Boston is going to be sweating a little bit. And I'm not saying that the Celtics are going to have any problems with them, but the Magic, for some reason, do extremely well against the Celtics. They've had their number for like two seasons in a row. I just think it's a good matchup. They like it. And so, if that happens, maybe that second round series becomes a lot more interesting too.
Yeah, and I think Boston is getting a bit of a break here with Jimmy Butler being hurt.
Yeah.
Or Miami. Going to be missing some time. And then obviously Alex Caruso goes down for the Bulls. You know, what team are they going to get? Probably won't really matter if both those guys aren't able to play. I mean, I think obviously if the Heat have Jimmy Butler, it's a totally different series. But you know, you go back and just look at the way that all went down, just like a big bummer because Jimmy Butler was so good last season. And not being able to see him in the playoffs is going to suck. But it'll be nice for someone else new to be in there. But you know, I feel like that would have been a fun first round matchup for sure. Like a 1-8. Like you just wouldn't expect that. Like here's your reward. Eric Spoelstra, Jimmy Butler, bam, out of bio.
Yeah, I know. Wow. And man, even for New York, it's like, hey, you fought for the second seed. Here are the Philadelphia 76ers with Joel Embiid. You know, like
9-0 now since Joel's come back.
Yeah, exactly.
So anyway, S, I appreciate it. Where can everybody find you at on social media?
Yeah, at just S. Barahini on Twitter or X or whatever you want to call it. Pretty much everything else, too. And do the writing at Forbes, some content stuff for Bleacher Report and whatnot. But yeah, that's it. Thank you.
Awesome, man. Yeah, appreciate it. And Pacer fans, we'll be back for probably a post-game recap. We might be back on Saturday. Don't know yet, but more than likely going to be back Sunday for that post-game recap, and we'll have everything covered for game one coverage. So you guys are going to want to enjoy, make sure you tune into that and enjoy that. So we will talk to y'all later next week.